Harih Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastho Mavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay, page 86. Shloka Anusharanam, some of your verses. 1-9. Krishna rescues Nanda Maharaj from Varuna's abode. 10-17. The Brajavasis get a glimpse of Aishwarya. Verses 1-9. Krishna rescues Nanda Maharaj from Varuna's abode. Sri Bhadarayani said, right, so now it goes back to Vyasadeva now speaking, right? Because before Suta Goswami speaking about what Sukadeva Goswami was saying, you know, that's written by Vyasadeva, and then occasionally Vyasadeva himself, then he'll speak to in changes between one story and another, or one scenario and another. Having worshipped Lord Janardana and fasted on the Ekadasi day, Nanda Maharaj entered the water of the Kalindi on the Dwadasi to take his bath. Because Nanda Maharaj entered the water in the dark of night, disregarding the time, was inauspicious, a demoniac servant of Varuna seized him and brought him to his master. Srila Jiva Goswami comments. The servant was by his nature not aware of Vaishnava Dharma, and is thus called Asura. The strong demon was suitably protecting the water at a demoniac time, Asurim Belam. Since he was Varuna's servant, Varuna was also at fault. Nanda had disregarded that time, which was usually forbidden for bathing. So he must have bathed earlier than normal, because different times of the day are for all these other living entities, right? It means the humans have their standard times when they use the water bodies. And then at the times outside of that, what's not recommended, that's when all those from the the heavenly planets, or specifically the Bhuvar Loka, right? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, all the Yakshas, Gandharvas, Vididhars, anybody that's in between, then they can all use it at that time. You know, it's just like after lunch, you're not supposed to swim, so that's the time for them to use the water. You know, or the Ganges, or at night, or different things like that. Somehow or another, that's their time, so it works for them. So maybe they had a big breakfast, and so now they can, you know, they're okay. Or, yeah, I'm not sure how it works, but it's just that it's worked out and everybody gets their times. So if you bathe during their time, then that's wrong. You know, just like they don't come down and bathe during our time. So.
What is their time? What
about? Didn't we just explain it?
From what time to what time? After lunch means like after. Evening means like after.
Yeah. I'm worried I'm going to get a bruise on the front of my forehead. Means lunch is generally happening during the middle of the day, right? Yeah, so then after that.
12 to 4.
Yeah, basically.
And night.
Or 1 to 4, you could say.
And night is like after 6:30.
Means you have the sandhya. Once it gets completely dark, then it's not supposed to be used until the Brahma Muhurta. So that's why you'd see is that before the sadhus, you know, the sadhanas, they would get up early, you know, whatever time they want to get up, they would brush their teeth like that, go to the toilet, but they would just use water from the loda and all that. Then they would chant, do other sadhana, and only when it was then you know, the time for bathing in the morning, then they would go take their bath in the rivers. Okay. Does that make sense? And since most people use showers, it doesn't matter. Right? It's not that you have to worry that if it's you're taking a shower at 2 o'clock, there'll be, you know, how come the water doesn't come out? And says, oh yeah, that's because the yaksha's stuff up in there like that. He's not going to go until 4, so you might, you know, don't even bother trying. You know, so. So that's for bodies of water, but those rules don't apply to the Ganges. Anyone can approach any time the Ganges. The Ganges, the well, and the Himalayas, those can be approached at any time, even if there's restrictions for other things. But these three, then there's no restrictions. So since if you're bathing in the Ganga, then don't worry about it. Does that solve your problem?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Why would they want to come here to bathe?
Because they're in the antariksha.
No, but it's a nice time. It's nice. You don't, it's not a nice place. Ganga's not nice.
You bitches. No, Ganga is nice.
Yes.
It's around it.
Well, we're not. That means, I'm sure they got their good spots, you know, so. In other words, if you found a nice spot to bathe, then that's probably where they're going to be, so don't go there at the wrong time. Right? So I mean, so at these other places, you don't have to worry because they'll never go there anyway. Is that what you're saying? Yeah, okay. Yeah. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, the Govardhan Puja ceremony took place on the new moon day. After this, there were torrents of rain and hailstones imposed by King Indra for 7 days. 9 days of the waxing moon have passed. On the 10th day, Indra worshipped Lord Krishna. Right, so he didn't even come down immediately. He gave it a little bit of time. So he only came down on the 10th day, even though the rain stopped on the 7th. Like that. After this, on the 11th day of the full moon, Ekadasi, Maharaj Ananda observed fasting for the whole day, and just early in the morning of the next day, Dwadasi, he went to take a bath in the river Jamuna. So was that this Ekadasi? Was there Ekadasi between... means Govardhan Puja was before between this Ekadasi and last, or the one before that? One before. Okay, so it was the last Ekadasi that Nanda Baba took, I mean, on the Dwadasi, okay. Because otherwise... this is still... Okay, so this is the the Ekadasi of the Bhishma Panchak, then. Yes, okay. Okay, Nanda Maharaj observed fasting for the whole day, and just early in the morning of the next day, Dwadasi went to take a bath in the river Jamuna. He entered deep into the water of the river, but he was arrested immediately by one of the servants of Varunadev. The servant brought Nanda Maharaj before the demigod Varuna and accused him of taking a bath in the river at the wrong time. According to astronomical calculations, because this astronomy sets the times. Astrology is the interpretation of those positions and times according to your birth chart. Does that make sense? At the time of your birth, which is identified by astronomy, then astrology, then you can do interpretation on that. You understand? So the hard science is the astronomy. That's how you tell where a planet is. And astrology is then what effect that planet will have on your birth chart. Right? Somebody said?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's the interpretation. According to astronomical calculations, the time in which he took a bath was considered demoniac. The fact was that Nanda Maharaj wanted to take a bath in the river Jamuna early in the morning before the sunrise, but somehow or another he was a little too early, and he bathed at an inauspicious time. Consequently, he was arrested. So it must have been before the Brahma Muhurta. Because I know of once Brahma Muhurta starts, you can. Though most, you see, it's when the Arunodoy starts, that's when they go for the bath. Because generally you can't see anyway. So if you're outside living in a natural environment, you can't see anyway, so you go at that time. But you can technically get up at the Brahma Muhurta and go. But it must have been just before Brahma Muhurta.
The Vedic day begins with Brahma Muhurta, the day?
Means what do you mean by Vedic day? Because you have four Vedic days. It means there's actually more. I think there's seven, but only four of them apply to us. So I don't think you can use Brahma's day or Indra's day or those kind of things. So.
Human days.
But if there's four kinds of human days. According to the sun, according to the moon, according to regular calculation, and according to sunrise, sunset.
Why I'm asking this is because devotees sometimes ask 16 hours have to be done in one day. So some days when Janmashtami is there, services are there, so till what time they should complete it, they wanted to know, should I explain ask. Janmashtami day services are a lot, the chanting remains for that's some
Prabhuji, what time Brahma Murta starts?
Brahma Muhurta, I know it's 3 hours before sunrise or 1.5 hours before sunrise. I don't remember.
3 o'clock.
Which it is.
3 o'clock.
Which?
3 a.m. 3 a.m. morning.
No, I was saying time before. I don't remember. It's 3 hours or 1.5. 1.5 hour before the sunrise. Are you sure? Because Krishna was getting up at 3 a.m.
Actually, it is 3 because 1.5 hours is the calculation of Ekadashi.
Yeah, so I think it's 3 hours before starts the Brahma Muhurta. That means sunrise itself. Arunodaya is already before that. It means when the sun comes up, not when it starts to get light. It's 3 hours from when the sun actually rises. So now if it's rising at 5:30, then that means at 2:30. Yeah. Something like that, because Krishna used to get up very early.
1.5 hours sounded better.
15 minutes, yeah, within 1.5 hours after sunrise. You know. Yes, that's it. So, see, the whole point is when you're dealing with vratas, that's one calculation. Then actual timings, that's another calculation. Just like Kartik month itself starts the day after Purnima on the Pratipat and ends on the Purnima. So the Ras Purnima is the last day of Kartik month. Right? But when do you start the Vrata of Kartik? On the Purnima. And when do you break it? On the Purnima. You understand? So there's a difference between these calculations of the days and then the vratas. So the vrata means whenever you get up, if it's a fast day, whenever you get up, that's when the fasting starts. Not that, okay, if it starts at, 1.5 hours before, so if I get it early enough, then I could have a whole meal before. No, we don't do that. You know, our neighbors who didn't turn left into Canaan and kept walking straight, they do that. We don't. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, so the whole idea is that you get up at 3 a.m, from 3 a.m. your vrata starts. What time do you go to bed? You know, if you go to bed at 9 o'clock, then that's the time you have to have it done by. And if not, then you keep chanting until you do. Or then the next day you make sure you get it all done. But you can't leave it for after that. Rounds can't go to the second day. Right? Means that the day after they can, but not the day after tomorrow. Right? Means, you understand, you can't do that. Like that. I think people froze on that one, right? Yeah. Does that make sense? So, from the time they get up until when they go to bed or not go to bed. These, sometimes before we used to do, it was easier actually to get up early, chant all your rounds and everything, the whole Abhishek, take prasad, and then we chant 16 rounds. By that time it was Mangalarti, go to Mangalarti and all that, then go to bed. Because otherwise, you know, you go to bed at 2 and then you have to get up at 3:30. It's like, doesn't work. So the point is that it's from when you get up until you're supposed to go to bed. Does that make sense? Yeah, so you don't have to get into this, you know, down to the nanosecond and all that. And if you don't get your rounds done by this time, then your head will explode. You know, you don't, that doesn't work like that. Sorry, sorry. Okay. Sukadev Goswami continued, O king, not seeing Nanda Maharaj, the coward men loudly cried out, O Krishna, O Rama. Lord Krishna heard their cries and understood that his father had been captured by Varuna. Therefore, the Almighty Lord, who makes his devotees fearless, went to the court of Varunadev. Footnote 35. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verses 1 to 3 to Bhagavat Arkamrichi Mala. Chapter 19, entitled The Perfection of the Mellow of Pure Love, The Unlimited Dimensions of Rasa, Siddha Prema Rasa, Rasa Garima, which is in the Prayojana section of the Thakur's book. So how Krishna likes to take care of the devotees, the variety of that, the variety of services that they like to render to Krishna. Right? So all these things then are all part of what, you know, is pleasing to Krishna. Right? So we can see is that's why this section is the unlimited dimensions of rasa, because remember there's a chapter after this. I think there's, can't remember how many chapters are in Prayojana, but you know, at least there's two. So this one is just the varieties that there's there in these dimensions of affection. Right? So makes sense. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments. Other cowherd men had accompanied Nanda Maharaj as guards when he went to take his bath at night. Though Krishna was sleeping on his bed of flowers far off, he heard the cowherd men shouting, Krishna, Rama. The word upasrutya indicates that he heard from close by, because Krishna pervades all places, and in this way is close to everyone, very near, because everything is Krishna, so he's there in everything. You know, there in that way, through his potencies, his paramatma, he's in everything. So there's no problem for Krishna to hear. He could understand that his father had been taken by Varuna. Quickly approaching the cowherd men, he asked where his father had sunk in the water. Finding the place, he jumped from the bank into the river and approached Varuna. He is called Svanam Abhayadha, relieving the fear of his associates. Oh, Svanam. Because later, by taking his father from Varuna and returning, he relieved the fear of his relatives. And so if you go and find the place and go in there, then they'll think that, oh, then you can find him. Point is, you could get to Varuna from anywhere, but the point is, you go in at that point. He took him from there, so that's where you go to Varuna's place from. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, when Nanda Maharaj was taken away by one of Varuna's servants, Nanda's companions began to call loudly for Krishna and Balaram. Immediately, Krishna and Balaram could understand that Nanda Maharaj had been taken by a servant of Varuna. Thus, they went to the abode of Varuna, for they pledged to give protection to the inhabitants of Vrindavan, who are all unalloyed devotees of the Lord. Devotees, having no shelter other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead, naturally cry to him for help. Exactly like children who do not know anything but the protection of their parents. Sukadev Goswami continued, seeing that the Lord, Hrishikesh, had arrived, the demigod Varuna worshipped him with elaborate offerings. Varuna was in a state of great jubilation upon seeing the Lord, and he spoke as follows. Right, so one would ask why a demon is there, because Varuna, he's the lord of the demons, actually, because they're in the lower area, so he's known as Asura Maya. He's the controller of the demons, like that, because he holds the, how you say, the rule of authority, actually, over all kings, like that. So that's why then, if a king, when he finishes his rule, he's going to go to the forest. Now, if he has money that's collected by, how do you say, it would be technically what you call bad money, right? Means it's the proper way of collection by the king, but it's for things that are improper, right? In other words, the properties of you know, the thieves, the dacoits, the how you say, you know, murderers and gamblers and all these kind of people, how they've acquired their money is sinful, and part of punishment may be appropriating their properties. So then, in that those properties are considered sinful. So if you use them, you will take on that sin. So the kings, they have a separate treasury for that kind of money. It's not kept with the regular treasury. And so he can either give it to very powerful Brahmins. You know, it's like he can give it to Vashishta or, you know, these kind of devotees. Or another thing is he can just put it into the water. You know, as an offering or as a tribute to Varuna. Because Varuna is the one who, you know, holds authority over all the kings. So in that way then, you know, in other words, it has to go to someone who's superior. It can't just be any Brahmin because they wouldn't be able to handle the sinful reactions. So it has to be someone very accomplished and all that. Does that make sense? So him being the lord of these demons, then, you know, they will be there in his court. Yes.
When the charity goes like this, it goes through the king. He does not observe the.
No, he just took that as punishment, but as until he uses it, he doesn't get the reaction. Like that. Regular things that are his regular standard, then that's the stuff he uses to maintain the kingdom and do all those things. Because that's, you know, good money collected in a proper way. So the taxes, the duties, the tolls, all these different things, these are proper. So from that, then he maintains the kingdom. And like that. But these ones, these are from people who are sinful. So it's sinful money. So in a good kingdom, there should be none of that. So then they don't have to worry. So it's a side thing. You don't hear much about it. Manu talks about it, but it's not something that you ever hear about in the Mahabharata or anywhere else that a king's worried about. Because either the kingdom's running nicely, they don't have such people. Or it's just one of those things. He just had that. Just like, you know, I'm sure that there was somebody that took out the garbage in the palace, but you never hear about it. You know? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right, so time can purify that kind of money?
No, because the king will know about it. Maybe if it somehow or another like that, he has that treasury and somehow or another they get... no one knows about it, and with time, then it's found generations later, and things like that. Then maybe there wouldn't be a consideration there. But then it's generally lost treasure. But that's generally in connection with stuff that's found outside. If it's inside, then they should know, because according to Vastu, there would be a certain place for it and things like that. So it'd just be known that's that kind of money. So if they find it, then they would just deal with it in the same way. You know, like that. Yeah. Yeah, time purifies most things, but it's just a matter of how much time, you know. So this is, if it's known what it is, then that's one thing, but in this case, then it's because bad money is, you have to be careful of bad money. Like we said, Prabhupada went, I think, when he was in Kenya, and that one family, I think, that was hosting, though he only stayed, I think, 3 days with them. They're, you know, very wealthy, well-to-do Hindus that are there, but Their business is alcohol. They run a distillery. I think it's the... I'm not even sure. It's not the biggest in Africa. And their relatives, the same family, runs the biggest, I think, in India. The one that's in Rajasthan. You know, I think it's like that Kingfisher or those kind of... That kind of guys, yeah. But it's... they're big. But that's bad money. Money made by alcohol is bad money. So, therefore, when they gave Prabhupada a donation, generally he would put that into accounts that would be used for, you know, various things, you know, like the, you know, for projects and things like that. But he would be, you know, saying, give this here, give this there. But in this, he didn't put it into his account. He just put it into the deity's hundi. Because you just don't want to deal with that kind of thing. It goes to Krishna. So the whole point is whether you control where it goes to Krishna, or you just, because once it's given to Krishna, then it's cleared. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So then after that, now the temple devotees don't have to worry, right? Because it's given as a donation of the hundi. Does that make sense? But if it's given directly, then they have to be very careful. So then let's say that gentleman comes and gives a donation to the temple, then they would see that money goes to the deity, to a festival, to something like that. They would not use it to, let's say, pay the electric bill of the secretary or stuff like that. Because once it goes personal, then people get problems. Does that make sense? So one always has to be careful of those kind of things. Like that. So the rule is for the general, for like a common Brahmin, if he gets money like that, ideally he avoids that kind of charity. But if he somehow or another gets charity that has that, he can use it for, he can give it in charity to other Brahmins, then he won't be affected, they won't be affected because it was given to him. He gives it to them, so they're unaffected by it. Then, or he can use it for dependents, but he can't get any benefit for it.
Dependence means his family?
Yes, family or dependents or student, you know, whatever it is, but he can't get benefits, so he can't buy something for himself for it. You know, he could use it for things that benefit the family. You know, buy clothes or things for them. You wouldn't use it for, let's say, buying dinner and say, well, it's for their, because you're getting also. You know, it would have to be specifically for them. So, therefore, I guess in the past, knowing that, then the wife could work out some things. You know, I was thinking about it. Yes. So. Yes.
Maharaji, if someone is unknowingly uses money, that it is a sin or it is not a sin?
Supposedly. Uses money. But the point is who's going to be using such money? So you don't have to worry about it. You can't not know where it came from.
Suppose that any ornament is kept in anywhere many a days and it will be a joko. It's a fire like. Moving this, anyone will get that. It will be harmful.
But that's hidden treasure. That's lost money.
It's not.
That's in a different category. That then, I think, depending on is, can't remember. There's some rules on it. I think any lost treasure is belongs to the king. Like that. I think if a Brahmin finds it, he can keep it. But if anyone else finds it, it has to go to the king. Or there's a certain tax. If it's from your own family, like you found it in your backyard or something like that, you know, from your forefathers, then I think you get to keep it, but there's a tax. If it's just out in the woods and it's nobody's, the government gets it. And I think if a Brahmin finds it, it's his. So you don't have to worry about it.
Okay.
Varuna was in a state of great jubilation upon seeing the Lord, and he spoke as follows. Srila Jiva Goswami comments. Varuna understood that Krishna, who, though the inspiration to the senses, Hrishikesha, is generally invisible to the senses, had come very near him, praptam. Right? So he's how the senses work. He's the controller of the senses, lord of the senses, but he can't be perceived by the senses. Right? So that's the uniqueness of Krishna, is you have all these... It is understood that when Varuna approached him, he worshipped Krishna to his ability, and thus his role as protector of the planets was fulfilled. The reason for the worship was his great bliss on seeing Krishna. Right? So it wasn't out of fear or anything else like Indra. So here we see that, you know, there's a chastisement, but he was very happy to see Krishna, while Indra was not as happy. Like that.
Maharaj, Varuna is the protector of the planets also. I mean, like, what does it mean? I didn't understand this statement. Does his role...
It means everything below Bhumandala he takes care of. He takes care of water and he takes care of everything below Bhumandala.
Okay.
Because that's where the Asuras live, no?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So the first seven talas, then he takes care of.
Okay.
Like that. The following should be said. Previously, Krishna had been angry at Varuna's wicked servant. On meeting Varuna, however, Krishna saw that he was not too bewildered, though somewhat frightened, and that he had approached while offering respects. Krishna then appeared to be forgiving, having made certain that he had attained his own desires, obtaining his father. Then Varuna became joyful on seeing him. Then he began worshipping him with articles and praises. So first he came. Then I think Varuna came, brought his father. Then everything's good. Then he Krishna was forgiving. He was happy, and then all this worship went on. Sri Varuna said, "Now my body has fulfilled its function. Indeed, now the goal of my life is achieved. O Lord, those who accept your lotus feet, O personality of Godhead, can transcend the path of material existence." Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Varuna said, "All the thousands of bodies which I have received till now have been useless because in all those lives I did not see you. Today my body has become successful." That is the indication of the word Nibritaha. Ni for nitaram, complete or successful, and brita for accepting a body. Yes, so you see, Sanskrit so complete is that you have one syllable, it can mean a whole word. Or, you know, so it could be used with that word, or you can use just that syllable. Very special. Varuna continued, "Today I've understood what is most valuable. Though I possess all jewels, I have not attained such a jewel as you yet." Right, because the ocean is one of the ones that produces jewels. And so therefore all these jewels are with Varuna. "Those who worship your lotus feet cross the ocean of material life. I have without effort attained your darshan. How fortunate I am." Right, because he didn't plan this. It's not like Indra, he sent somebody. It's just that the servant was doing what he thought was his duties, but he had wandered into Braj, so he's not supposed to be there. He should be other places where the materialists are. That's who they're supposed to control. But then they're in Braj, that's Krishna's place. He's technically not supposed to be there, but he was. "My obeisance is unto you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, the Supreme Soul, within whom there is no trace of the illusory energy, which orchestrates the creation of this world. Your father, who is sitting here, was brought to me by a foolish, ignorant servant of mine who did not understand his proper duty. Therefore, please forgive us." Right. So one of the points there is that if you have responsibility over someone, then the mistakes of that person are also yours. Right? That's how it works. So then, in this case, even though Varuna hadn't asked him to behave in that way, and he had, still Varuna is still responsible, because he's supposed to train his servants and everything. So that's technically how things work. Things move up in that way. Not that it just stops at, you know, the convenient point. You know, does that make sense? That's the kind of the modern thing. Yeah.
So the same applies for the family members?
Yes. Means that they do something wrong, then the father is actually...
Guru disciple or the king and the subjects.
Yeah, like that. Yes.
So does that mean that one takes the reaction for all one's dependents, also children and...
Yeah, like that. That's what it means. Like that. So depending upon the situation, relationship, there's more or less. The family, yes, that's more direct. But then, you know, if you're it's something else, he's in charge here. So the king, his citizens. So these was just one of his citizens, one of his things. So the reactions from that he gets. That's what it means. People like to be in charge. They just don't know about the other half of the equation. You know, if someone does something wrong in your zone, then you get the reaction for that. Or we're thinking, no, we'll just come in, tell this, that, we're squeaky clean. No, you get the reaction.
Okay. The Vaishnava guru or like leader of the zone, they're devotee, they're chanting Hare Krishna, and they have some dependents on underneath them they're taking care of. So the dependents do something sinful. And how is it that they're getting the sin, even though they're chanting and...
But why not?
The sin.
What do you mean? What do you mean by how would they get the sin?
Does it come by
you know, Amazon package, or does the postman deliver it, or it's just like set up as that bouncing Benny in the backyard? So when you go out there, then it explodes and you get it, or you know, what do you mean?
How do they get the reaction?
How do they get? Yeah. You want to know just exactly the technique of how they get.
The sin is coming because from the dependence. Except
no. But what's the problem?
The problem is that as soon as the sin comes, their chanting should absorb it, and they should
absorb it. So just they start getting fatter and fatter. Are you sure absorb is the word, not absolve or
absolve? Yeah.
Might be better. Because you generally see Vaishnavas a little thin, so it can't be absorbed. Otherwise, then they would be quite fat. Yeah, the point is they're chanting, so therefore it goes. But it's not that they don't get reactions. This whole process is not a plaything. It's real.
Yeah.
You know? So that's why it says don't become any of those positions unless you can save the dependent from death. You know, because basically, if they're properly trained up to the age of 16, then the reactions go to the parents. The kids don't get reactions. It goes to the parents. So then you have to be careful. Does that make sense? After 16, huh? After 16, then it goes to them, because then they're adult. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah, but
But if we still suffer together?
That's going to be there. But there may be the aspect of the daughter until she is married. Then it'll go to her husband. But until then, it goes to her father.
Early marriage.
Yeah. Work things out. Yeah. So these things are real. We may say, oh, we're devotees and all that. That's okay if we're just chanting, but we're talking community, business, economics, management, governance, all these things. We can't talk those things and then say these don't apply because we chant. Because if we chant and God's laws don't apply, then by our chanting also the modern conceptions and our other material needs wouldn't apply either. You know what I'm saying? So it's either we're doing the Hari Das Thakur program, and then we can say we chant, we don't care for the rules and all that, and all this doesn't matter, and that's fine. You chant 3 lakhs of rounds a day. What sin's going to touch you anyway? Right? But if we're spending our time doing all these other things, then we must consider that those things are dependent on God's laws. So it's serious. It's real. So... Yeah. So the point is that's why then one who's situated nicely in the practice of the Vedic, you know, recommendations, then they will not be affected by this, right? The king, he's performing his sadhana, he's worshipping the Brahmins, he's doing his yajnas, he's giving in charity, he's doing all that. That's how he survives taking on 1/6 of the sin of all the citizens, right? That's if he's taking the proper tax. He's taking more, like nowadays, what is it, sometimes 40%?
Yeah, it depends how much you earn.
Yeah, so the higher you earn, the more they take. Mm. Up to a level, I think when you get up to the big corporations, then it drops down to, you know, you need a microscope to see it. But, you know, but for the average guy, then it just goes up. So if they're taking 40% tax, means they take 40% of your karma. You know, which maybe works out good for them, because then the corporates, they're the really bad ones, but they're only taking a smaller tax. But the volume is very great, so probably it works out. You understand? So the whole point is that 1/6 is because that's the rule. It's 1/6 tax. It's 16.5% is the tax. 25% is times of emergency. So technically, if you take 25% tax, then it goes up. Right, unless it's something that it says, because Manu mentions what are the tax rates for different things. So the general in production is 1/6, but for certain things you can't take that kind of thing because the profit margin is so small. Like that, you know. So it's like, let's say gold is one of them. I think it's like 2%, because you can't charge big amounts for the gold, because otherwise people can't do so. How much is there? The difference between what the cost of the gold is and their workmanship and all that's not so much. You know what I'm saying? So you can only take... So different things, you can take different levels. But the general thing is if you grow a field of grains, the king can take his 1/6. You know? Well, now let's say if there's less, then he might take less. If there's more, then he would take the same. You know, so... You know, unless it's a time of emergency, then he can take up to 25. But that's the maximum they can take. They can't take beyond 25.
The devotees who are engaging, certain devotees, and we are going and assisting them in just teaching scriptures. So how much are we responsible for them, their karma? And
means we're teaching. So why would you be responsible?
Means many times they are not present around. They are moving, traveling. So we are moving and teaching them. So.
Yeah, but what has that got to do with this? Are you taking responsibility for them?
Some sort of,
but
because they're absent, their main caretaker is absent. The devotee is responsible. He has gone out to his home or for health checkup, something like that. So, for a long period of time, he has handed over the responsibility. So, in that case,
I'm sure you would be sharing. Yeah, why not? Makes taking responsibility takes on a different flavor, no? Everyone wants to be in charge, and okay, but then you get the ooh, because it's just the way it works. It goes up the line. You know, so. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Shri Krishna said, "Why are you embarrassing me by praising me like this?" In answer, Varuna says, "I have really offended you." With this mood, he speaks this verse. The one can enter into the water before the sunrise if a little of the Dwadasi alone remains as permitted by those knowledgeable of bhakti scriptures. The one can enter the water before the sunrise if a little of the Dwadasi alone remains as permitted by those knowledgeable of the bhakti scriptures. One of my servants, not knowing this, took your father away and committed a great offense. Right, so if it's in the morning before the sunrise, it's just the Dwadasi titi, it's not mixed with anything else, then you can take your bath during that time, no matter, I guess, whatever time it is. But he was probably taking, you can't take bath at this time, he didn't realize about the Dwadasi rule. Like that. One of my servants, not knowing this, took your father away and committed a great offense. The offense of my servant is also my offense. This fool does not know what is to be done. Your father, brought by my servant, is here, pointing with his hands. He showed Nanda Maharaj seated on a jeweled throne, worshipped by Varuna himself. His father was engaged in remembering his own worshipable deity, Krishna. Varuna continued, "You are the ocean of forgiveness, but because I am the ocean of offense, you can punish me suitably if you wish." Okay, so he understands what went wrong in this. He's willing to take the responsibility for that. And so then, you know, this is the appropriate mood. But you can only do that with those who are appropriate. You can't do this. You can't behave properly with people who are improper. You know, unless you can handle how they'll deal, because they'll take advantage. Like Yudhishthira deals properly, but Duryodhana didn't. He took advantage of Yudhishthira Maharaj's dealing properly, because technically, when Yudhishthira Maharaj came into that situation, technically he didn't have to agree to the gambling match in that. But because he was working on the principle that Dhritarashtra approved of it, and he is like their guardian, because after the father died, then he was their authority. So then if he approves of it, then he's following authority. So in this way, he's following the scriptural recommendation. But because of that, Duryodhana was taking advantage. So that's why the rules are there. So you can stick with that, and you see it works out nicely, and that's why Yudhishthira is glorified. But at the same time, is you don't necessarily have to deal in these open ways with those who are not honest. Does that make sense? So it just depends if it's going to how it's going to affect or not. Does that make sense? So for him, for Krishna's pastime, then it's going to unfold very nicely this way. But if it's going to affect Krishna's service because these other people will take advantage, then the one does not need to. It means that the main rules wouldn't be followed, you'd follow other rules. It means you're still following the rules, but you're following the rules of how you don't have to follow the certain rules when you're dealing with people who don't follow rules. Does that make sense? Yeah. Like that. Let's say, just like If by lying it'll save someone's life, then lying is not considered wrong. Does that make sense? Because when you're dealing with dishonest people, they're doing bad work, so why tell them the truth and then they can carry on their bad work? So therefore, if you lie, then they can't carry on their bad work, so then they go away. Does this make sense? So like that, then the rules are set up. They're actually quite practical. But you have to know how to use them from the mode of goodness, not the mode of passion. Because otherwise, you use them from goodness, it works out nicely. You use them from passion, then like Duryodhana, it doesn't work out so great. In his Sri Chaitanya Shikshamrita, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura writes, "This pastime represents the misconception that the bliss of devotional service can be enhanced by indulging in wine and other intoxicants."
This command explains it's so difficult to understand.
Why is that difficult to understand?
Yeah, it speaks about what is the relationship of Varuna's servants act with the images.
I mean, why Varuna and wine and other intoxicants?
Oh, did anything can be done by us with mode of passion? It will be in our choice, right? And any other choice, not choice.
I don't understand how does this. No, but I'm just saying, how does this relate to Varuna here?
And now you say that if you do something in the mode of passion, that it is our choice, but the Lord's choice that we perform.
No, the point is we do what is our duty. We don't put on Krishna that it's his fault. We have our duties in the situations we're in. We apply those duties.
But it is in the written in the scripture that sometimes our intelligence are stolen by the Lord.
Stolen by the Lord? No, they're stolen by Maya.
Lord.
Maya.
Material nature.
Yes.
So suppose a person is born intelligent, but it is not the his intelligence is not applied sometimes.
That's Maya.
That is Maya.
You have to understand stolen by the Lord means stolen by Maya. If we're talking about Arjuna on the battlefield, then that's another thing. But we don't put ourselves in that position. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to say anything more over here. No. Okay. As I mentioned, he's the Lord of the demons, and so then this is one of their popular pastimes. You're also dealing with liquid, like that. Because, our ocean, you can say, well, our ocean is salty, but there are oceans that are, not salty. Okay? Yes. So therefore, then, you can't mix this. You sometimes see that sahajas may do that, others do that. I think we had one crew before that they got into this. And so the whole point is that it's a misconception. They don't go together. I think it was like the hippies, they thought the LSD was giving them a spiritual, experience. But not exactly like that. O Krishna, O seer of everything, please give your mercy even to me. This guy seems to be very happy. O Krishna, O seer of everything, please give your mercy even to me. O Govinda, you are most affectionate to your father. Please take him home. Shrutajiva Goswami comments. Taking Krishna to his house, Varuna showed Krishna his father. He addressed Krishna as Govinda. You are most merciful in accepting the bathing ceremony as Govinda by Indra, a great offender. O Krishna, affectionate to your father. By saying this, Varuna satisfies both Krishna and Nanda. This also indicates I recognized him as your father and kept him here in hope that I would have the good fortune of your coming. Right, so he came there, and then since he was there, then he kept him nicely because he says he kept him in his own place. So then he's very nice. He's worshipped nicely by Varuna Dev. And so he was hoping that Krishna would come to get him and then he'd get his darshan. Like that. But he's mentioning Krishna in connection with his father. Right? So by mentioning that, then it's pleasing to Krishna and Krishna and to Krishna's father. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, the demigod Varuna received Lord Krishna and Balaram with great respect and said, "My dear Lord, actually at this very moment, because of your presence, my life as the demigod Varuna has become successful. Although I am the proprietor of all the treasures in the water, I know that such possessions do not make for a successful life. But at this moment, as I look at you, my life is made completely successful because of seeing you. I no longer have to accept a material body. Therefore, O Lord, Supreme Personality of Godhead, Supreme Brahman, and Supersoul of everything, let me offer my respectful obeisances unto you. You are the Supreme Transcendental Personality. There is no possibility of imposing the influence of material nature upon you. I am very sorry that my foolish man, by not knowing what to do or what not to do, has mistakenly arrested your father, Nanda Maharaj. So I beg your pardon for the offense of my servant. I think that it was your plan to show me your mercy by your personal presence here. My dear Lord Krishna, Govinda, be merciful unto me. Here is your father. You can take him back immediately." Sukadev Goswami said, "Thus satisfied by Lord Varuna, Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord of Lords, took his father and returned home, where their relatives were overjoyed to see them."
Can you say that for Varuna, for example, there could be two scenarios to act? If when he saw Nanda Maharaj that was brought by his servant, he could have immediately returned him in a sense of not offending Krishna. Or the other one that he took because he wanted to take darshan to get darshan.
No, it could be that it just... Krishna arranged that he was taken so he could give his mercy to Varuna, but Varuna is just his servant there, but then Varuna acted properly by taking care of Nanda Maharaj and seeing his fault in the whole process. So that's generally more what you see here. I think that it was your plan to show me your mercy by your personal presence here. So, you know, it seems to have worked out. So it's Krishna's plan. Because otherwise, yes, if you had taken him back, then he may not have seen, or, you know, who knows what would have happened. You know, it might have freaked out the cowherd men, you know, Varuna shows up, you know, so many things. Srila Sanatana Goswami comments, "Satisfied by the methods described, avam, by treatment, words, and actions, Krishna returned. Why was he satisfied with just that for such a great offense? Krishna is omniscient, Bhagavan, and knew that actually Varuna had not made offense. In fact, Varuna did it with a desire to see Krishna. Krishna showed special bhakti for his father. And since Nanda is the father of Krishna, he had no fear of suffering by his very nature." Like that. Here he's indicating that maybe Varuna did, you know, arrange it, but at the same time having come there, then he knew Krishna would come, so therefore he didn't send him back. And then thinking that, like that. Because you get the idea is he took him without knowing. And he says Krishna knew he had not made any offense. Right? But once he gets him, he kept him, then that you could consider, but then he knew Krishna would come.
Because also the relatives of the coward men, they would worry, naturally.
Yeah, but that's there. But then they surrender to Krishna, and they're thinking about Krishna, so it's not a problem. You always have to remember, they don't have any problem over there. It's just different tastes and varieties of ecstasy. Right? It's just like, do you mind if on a daily basis there's, you know, a wide variety of kinds of flavors and all that, and they change according to the days or the seasons or that in what you're eating. Is there a problem?
Huh? Eating, no problem.
Yes. So, that there's different kinds of flavors, all these things are nice, and it's not a problem. Right? So, that's the whole thing, is everything connected to Krishna, it's not a problem. Because we're under the ideas that I'm happy if certain things happen, and if certain things don't happen, I'm unhappy. So therefore, Krishna conscious means all the things I don't want to happen don't happen, and all the things I want to happen, that's what happens. And so therefore, Krishna consciousness is so perfect. Right. But that's more of a concept of the heavenly planets. You know? Or if we emphasize that, okay, here all these interactions give pain and trouble, and so therefore the spiritual must be no pain, no trouble, and all that. I said all gain, no pain, right? You know, like that. And so therefore, you know, that's what the fat guy on the side's saying while he's eating his chips, right? And all the other guys are working out, yeah. Yeah, so is it slightly different? Because, okay. Does that make sense? So there, because it's all connected to Krishna, it's fine. Right? So if it's connected to good taste, it doesn't matter the varieties of flavors. So if it's connected with Krishna, then there's no problem. Here it's a problem, but that's because it's being misused. But there it's not a problem. So, we have to get slowly. We'll get used to that concept. You know, it's a spiritual concept. We're used to the material concept. So, since Nanda is the father of Krishna, he had no fear of suffering by his very nature. Right, being the father of Krishna, he couldn't be suffering. No. Taking his hand, he returned home. His friends, the people of Raja, experienced continual rivers of happiness. The word cha indicates that Nanda also celebrated the breaking of the fast. Right? Because it was Dwadasi and he had fasted Naisena Ekadasi, so they went back and he also celebrated the breaking of the fast. So they all took the shot. The Lord was pleased. This indicates that compared to Indra's offense, Varuna's offense was little, since Varuna wanted to see the Lord and worship him. In relation to Indra, it is not mentioned that the Lord was pleased. He was glorified, sankirtitaha. Being pleased after someone commits a great offense is not possible. Thus, Krishna returned home pleased because of Varuna's bhakti. So we can see it's not actually an offense. Like that. But Indra, that was an offense.
But still, it's considered something to do with intoxication.
Probably because it has to do with... you could look at it that the servant, then he not knowing what's right or what's not right, and due to pride, then he took his father. And so then pride is also compared to madness or intoxication. Like that. So then they have a connection there. So, okay. That's something.
Maharaj, when we recommend somebody for initiation to the guru, then it is our responsibility to make sure that this person is not going to add to the guru's suffering because of the reaction.
It's just a statement.
No, I'm asking. Isn't it so that we should...
Confirmation. Okay.
Because
I thought it was going a different way. So if we recommend him and all that, and then it's all that, do we also get reaction for it?
No.
That's the next question. Okay, I was just thinking, where is this going? And then suddenly he goes, so therefore... Oh, okay. Okay, so in other words, the second one's the actual question.
Both
the first
them
one
are,
is that...
Both of them are real.
But it was inspired by the first one or the second one?
Inspired by the first one.
And then just the second one happened to come along since it was there.
Yeah.
You know, since the samosas are here, hey, we could eat them and all that. Okay.
Asking this one, why not the other?
Okay.
Or is it so that you don't have to think so much? The guru can understand who is falling, not falling, and he gives.
So then you can just recommend anybody.
Yeah.
Right. We need five pujaris. So you, and no, not you. You.
Yeah. Because in Bhaktisiddhanta's literatures, we find a concept called fiend diksha. Those who have taken fiend diksha from me.
Fiend.
Yeah, fiend. F E I G N E D. Fiend.
Fiend.
Feigned
diksha.
Yeah,
feigned means not real.
Yeah. So it's like
that's the individual, not the person.
Yeah.
So the guru can understand who is like a cheater disciple, which is like, so there are these three questions.
Any more in this, how you say, particular cocktail? See, is that if you're taking responsibility, you have to see that who you are recommending is as much as you know to your ability, and you're trying to actually understand properly for the pleasure of Krishna, that someone's qualified, and then according to your experience, then only then they're being recommended. It's not that you can do whatever you like and then there won't be a reaction. Like that. If there's action, there's reaction. So the point is, if it's to please Krishna, then that's one thing. You could say, no, but we need pujaris. But the point is the Krishna is supposed to be worshipped by those who have the proper attitude. Right? So they have to have the proper potential and be showing that. Then they're recommended. Like that. Right? And so then the spiritual master, he's supposed to check himself, the disciple, all these kind of things. But some, they'll just go if the president, if they trust the president knows what he's doing, then they'll just, if he recommends, they'll initiate. Some don't. They just themselves look at it and all that, and despite the temple president's been asking for the last 10 years, they still don't initiate. Like that. So you get like that. So the point is, the responsibility is there on all these parties. And the initiate has to be responsible that they're getting initiated, and it's not like Prabhupada says, it's not like it's a, what do you call it? A fad. You know, it's just, they're just doing it because it's the fashionable thing to do. You know, you're supposed to have a guru, so then they all have gurus. Does that make sense? Okay, so therefore Varuna was seeing it in relationship, he could see Krishna. And so therefore, because it was bhakti, and then it's not a problem. Yeah? Well, good. You're good with your three questions? Yeah? Why, you have a fourth? No, okay. If we're the one that recommended the guy who recommends, but it didn't work out, do I get it? Okay. Okay.
And if we didn't recommend?
And if we didn't recommend?
Can we get the results?
I was right. See, I told you. You get some gold star or something like that. Okay. Okay, verses 10 to 17. The Vrajavasis get a glimpse of Aishwarya. Sukadeva Goswami continued, Nanda Maharaj had been astonished to see for the first time the great opulence of Varuna, the ruler of the ocean planet, and also to see how Varuna and his servants had offered such humble respect to Krishna. Nanda described all this to his fellow cowherd men. Footnote 36. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura assigns verses 20 to 22 to Bhagavad Akramichi Mala, chapter 19, entitled The Perfection of the Mellow of Pure Love. The unlimited dimensions of rasa, siddha prema rasa, rasa garima, which is in the Prayojana section of the Thakura's book. Right, so just, they're tasting all these different things about, you know, the opulences, the greatness, what Krishna had done, all these different things. So it's just, the ocean of happiness of the devotees has been so great. Yes.
It's like a progression, because in 26 chapters, you know, all the coward men came to Nanda Baba and they had serious doubts about Krishna's origin. And he said, no, he's not like that, he's my son. But now he's got in a situation where he sees all the opulence of Varun and how Varun and his people worship Krishna. So now he's got the doubts.
Yeah, but he reconciled it is that he's, you know, he's not Narayan, but he's as good as, you know, like that. So he's empowered by. So then if it's there, it's all right. But then they can just think of him as their son. Because if he is Narayan, then that's a problem. But if he's not, then...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maharaj is thinking of Narayan, he's thinking Narsingdev.
No, that's his deity. Narayan means Narayan. But he may worship as Nrisingadev. But that's because Nrisingadev will protect Krishna. Hearing about Krishna's pastimes with Varuna, The coward men consider that Krishna must be the Supreme Lord, and their minds, O King, were filled with eagerness. They thought, will the Supreme Lord bestow upon us his transcendental abode, right? And they're already living in it, but... That's the thing, is that they're such nice devotees, they think, wow, you know, when will we become perfect and all that, and attain that, but they're already on that platform. So we see here is just that they, despite whatever the position of Krishna and all that, it doesn't actually change their love for him. That's the uniqueness of the Braja Bhakti. While you see in other realms, the flavor changes, it changes their view, or they can't deal with it. You know, like Gopu Kumar and Vaikuntha, then so many so many of the Vaikuntha Vasis couldn't handle how he dealt with Vaikunthapati, you know, like you would with Krishna. You know, he was informal, how he would go up and just talk and this and that. So they said, you can't do that, because he has a certain mood, so they can't handle another mood. Others could handle the other mood, but they just said, these ones can't, so just be careful, in front of them don't show that. Right? And then others can appreciate that others have, so that's more rare. And you see that the Dwarkavasis, depending upon what the flavor is, if it's more sweetness, they go in that direction, if it's more Aishwarya, they go in that direction. But with the Brajabasis, then they just stay in the same mood no matter what happens. Like that. But like you said, they're slowly, slowly seeing more. Like that. I guess because, you know, it adds up, you know, after a while you start seeing. You know. But at the same time, it doesn't change their affection. That's the whole point. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, the cowherd men, understanding that Krishna was the Supreme Lord, eagerly began to wonder if Krishna would take them to that place which is the goal of those who worship him, Svagatim, beyond the material realm, Sukshmam. They said, O Nanda, previously explained that Garga had said that Krishna was like Narayan, but not that he was identical to Narayan. Now you have concluded that he is God by directly seeing Varuna praising him. We think he should fulfill the desires of your friends in this material world, because your son, who is also the son of our brother, the son of our sister, the son of our daughter, is the Supreme Lord. We have affection for him, and he has affection for us.
What is the son of your brother and of our sister?
Not exactly sure. Ooh, raining. Okay. Krishna said, O cowherd men, please take whatever you desire from the Supreme Lord. One of them said, we should take liberation. Another said, let us be residents of Vaikuntha. Every cowherd man had a different desire, but there would be no weakening of their relationship with Krishna because of seeing him as God. That was the case of Vasudeva's father and Arjuna, however. Right? Their weakening of their relationship with Krishna was weakened because of seeing him as God. So they weren't seeing him as Krishna, they were seeing him as God, Arjuna and Vasudeva. Right? But for the residents of Vrindavan, it didn't change their view. Vasudeva said, you two are not my sons, but the Supreme Lord. Today I surrender to your lotus feet. Arjuna said, please forgive me for whatever I have spoke, thinking you of as a friend. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, Actually, although Krishna was acting so wonderfully, Maharaj Nanda and Mother Jashoda could not think of him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Instead, they always accepted him as their beloved child, because that's how he dealt. That's their love for him. He reciprocated that, so how could they not see him just in that way? Because if he was the Supreme Lord, then you'd expect him to act differently. So the point is, he may be the Supreme Lord, but he's not acting as that. He's acting as their son. So it's natural that they will just see him in that way. But he's acting as a son because of their love for him. Right? It's not some obligation or anything. Thus, Nanda Maharaj did not accept the fact that Varuna worshipped Krishna because he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Rather, he took it that because Krishna was such a wonderful child, he was respected even by Varuna. Sukadeva Goswami continues. So, even though they're bringing these points up, this is not actually how they're actually able to think. They may say, but in reality, he's just one of the family. Sukadeva Goswami continued. Because he sees everything, Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, automatically understood what the cowherd men were conjuring. Wanting to show his compassion to them by fulfilling their desires, the Lord thought as follows. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Thus, understanding the desires of his relatives, Krishna, who had knowledge of all Krishna, who had knowledge of all realizations of the happiness of Brahman, of Vaikuntha, and Brajabhumi, began to think in order to fulfill their desires. Though usually he covers or withdraws his majesty according to the degree of prema, in this case, by the inspiration of the Leela Shakti, he had knowledge of all his forms simultaneously. Krishna thought, though these cowherd men actually understand that Brahman and Vaikuntha are insignificant because of tasting sweetness of Krishna prema, I will give them realization of Brahman and Vaikuntha happiness in order to fulfill the desires they manifest while they play the roles of unintelligent humans. Mm-hmm. Right? Because realizing that, you just see it's something less. It has its own taste and its grandeur, but it still doesn't compare to the Vraja Bhakti. Lord Krishna thought, certainly people in this world are wandering among higher and lower destinations, which they achieve through activities performed according to their desires and without full knowledge. Thus people do not know their real destination. Srila Sanatana Goswami comments, all people wander in this world. Vai indicates that it is well known. The meaning is this. Other persons do not know at all their real goal. This means the best of yogis and jnanis. Right? So they're wandering. That's understood. That they know where they're going. That's all. That they don't know where they're actually going. That's also understood. Because they say they want to go to Brahman. They will go to the heavenly planets. All these different things, but they don't actually understand because that's not where the soul actually wants to go. So the soul's only happy when it's with Krishna, so they don't actually understand. Krishna thought, but more than the inhabitants of Vaikuntha, I cannot give up my eternal devotees who cannot bear separation from me even for a moment. They are complete in their goal. I must fulfill their desire, though it arises out of curiosity or out of prema. My servants or cowherds wander about in pastimes with me higher or lower in the wave of prema, performing activities of service, with desires centered on me, and with knowledge of bhakti. Because the whole point is higher or lower. It's just a matter of where it is. If there's a wave, so there's the lower aspect, there's the higher aspect. But the point is because the lower brings it to the higher. Does that make sense? So even though they're situated in all these aspects of prema, they're tasting all these other aspects within it. Does that make sense? So that even if they're on these higher platforms, let's say like Anubhava, that the point is that it doesn't mean that they don't taste sneha pranaya, like this. These are all there. They're just different aspects within it. But they're all in connection with the higher principles that they're at. Does that make sense? So the whole wave is tasted. Yeah? Yeah? My servants or cowherds wandering these pastimes with me, higher or lower in the wave of prema, performing activities of service, with desires centered on me and with knowledge of bhakti. Always existing with me, they know Vaikuntha and Atma. I will fulfill the desires of my dear devotees, since the desire includes everything dear to me, in terms of knowing and the object of their knowledge. Right, so it's all connected to him. It's all in relationship to him. So therefore, then all this, wanting to know and this and that, it doesn't change the flavor. Does that make sense? Just like, let's say, you don't really know somebody so much, and you're just getting to know them. And while you're getting to know them, then they mention something that, you don't appreciate. And so then it may affect your relationship. Right? like that, something they've done before, this or that, or you know, like this. But if there's somebody that there's deep affection for, then whatever they've done before doesn't really matter at all, because this is who they are now, right? So the relationship they have with Krishna, then it's unaffected. Does that make sense? Yes? No? Kind of? Maybe? Okay. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is always eager to give information to the conditioned soul that there is a spiritual sky far, far beyond this material sky, transcendental to the innumerable universes created within the total material energy. Krishna is, of course, always very kind to every conditioned soul, but as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, he is especially inclined to the pure devotees. Hearing their inquiries, Krishna immediately thought that his devotees in Vrindavan should be informed of the spiritual sky and the Vaikuntha planets therein. All conditioned souls, being under the impression of the bodily concept, are working according to their particular type of body. These activities are creating their future conditioned life. Because they have very little information of the spiritual world, they do not generally take to spiritual activities, which are called bhakti yoga. Those who successfully practice bhakti yoga go directly to the spiritual world after giving up this present body. And there they become situated in one of the Vaikuntha planets. The inhabitants of Vrindavan are all pure devotees. Their destination after quitting the body is Krishna Loka. They even surpass the Vaikuntha Lokas. The fact is that those who are always engaged in Krishna consciousness and mature, pure devotional service are given the chance after death to gain Krishna's association in one of the universes within the material world. Krishna's pastimes are continuously going on, either in this universe or in another universe. Just as the sun globe is passing over many places across this earthly planet, so Krishna Lila, or the transcendental advent and pastimes of Krishna, are also going on continuously, either in this or another universe. The mature devotees who have completely executed Krishna consciousness are immediately transferred to the universe where Krishna is appearing. In that universe, the devotees get their first opportunity to associate with Krishna personally and directly. The training goes on, and as we see in the Vrindavan Lila of Krishna within this planet, Krishna therefore revealed the actual features of the Vaikuntha planets so that the inhabitants of Vrindavan could know their destination. So we see here is that all these different things are talked about, but within the same context, but you're getting all the different aspects. So those who are in the Bhamalila pastimes, when that pastime ends, it appears they leave their body, they go to Goloka. Right? So in that way you can say they go from here to the spiritual world, but they're already in the spiritual world. But, you know, the principle is the same. Those that are here within the material world, the material bodies, when they leave that, then they go to Gokul. And then they perform their activities there. So it applies in both. So it's not that, well, you know, but then that shows they're not in the spirit. No, it just establishes the principle that the one method works on all levels. Because the eternal associates never, they don't have to leave their body. They just transfer, that's all. But it's arranged. Okay. So I'm going to have to end the class at this point. Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Jai Srila Prabhupada ki
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki
Jai
Nitai Gaura Prabhupada ki.
Cancel when there's a description of universal time. A muhurta is described as 48 minutes.
Yeah, that's the standard.
Yeah.
50 minutes is according to the sun.
Yeah.
You know, it means when you're using like the I think the civil day, you know, like that. But the standard thing that you, because we do all our stuff according to the moon. Mm-hmm. Some things are sun, but most things are moon. That's why for us the muhurt is 48 minutes, not 1 hour.
Mm-hmm. And Prabhupada mentions that Brahma muhurt is 1.5 hours, so basically it seems that it's 2 muhurts together in one.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Very good. Thank you.